Crime, Wine, and Chaos contains adult language and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, you beautiful chaos kids. I'm Amber.
And I'm Naomi. And this is Crime, Wine, and Chaos.
Bum, bum, bum.
Here we are. Here we are. Oh, here we are. Here we are. Sister.
Sister. Sister.
Here I go. Here I go. Here I go again. Hi.
Hey.
I'm all amped up because I just listened to a crazy ass story about peanuts. We're doing a double recording tonight, guys. We had an episode. We just put an episode in the can for the Chaos Kids Club members. And that was wild. That was a wild ride. So if you want to know what the other Chaos Kids in the club know, then you got to go over to the Patreon and join the club. Join the club. What is it? Patreon.com/crime, wine, and chaos, something like that.
I think it's patreon.com/crime, wine, and chaos.
I was so close. I was so close.
You were so close. I almost had it,
but that wouldn't have got you there, right? Horseshoes and hand grenades. go over there. It's five bucks a month. Get a bonus episode every month. And we do virtual wine nights now.
Yeah.
For every 10 new members to the club, we schedule a virtual wine night. You can hang out with us, drink with us, get chaotic with us, talk about whatever you want to talk about with us. So come join the club. We have a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume we have a good time because this episode is going to drop after the first virtual wine night, but we're recording it before the first virtual wine night. So I'm just, you know what? I'm going to speak it into existence. It was amazing, you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing.
That'd be so funny.
Such a good time.
After this episode drops, we send out a socials post that's like, we no longer have a Patreon account. Never mind. That was bad.
How are you, sister?
I'm moving into
episode two of the night.
I'm doing everything I can to stay cool, and it's brutal.
Sister, you're always cool.
Ooh, thank you.
You're so welcome.
You're so cool. Thank you.
You're the coolest. What are you drinking?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm drinking a Cab Sauv from Washington, which is our home state. Lots of wineries here.
There are.
Substance.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like it's also the name of a perfume. But moving on.
Okay. I mean, it smells good. I could dab a little. Okay, speaking of perfume, I got a new perfume, right? No, listen. Not dab. Not that kind of dab. I mean, on the wrist.
You guys didn't see it. I just dabbed.
Wait.
Oh. Shout out to Hamed, who's a big time fan. We work together. And he's a dabber, and it's awesome.
Ooh, I want to see
Ironically, he also is the one who started Tracksuit Tuesday. So he gets credit for dabbing and Tracksuit Tuesday.
I love Tracksuit Tuesday.
Me too. Anyway, sorry. You were going to tell a story about perfume. You just bought a new perfume.
It's a $5 story. I bought an apple perfume. It smells like celery.
Flashbacks to like high school. Remember when like the fruity, smelly body sprays became a thing and they were like everybody had to have them, and the one everyone wanted was pear. Do you remember that?
Okay. Yes. This is not a
or grass. There was grass. Remember when there was grass?
I feel like it was cucumber melon.
There was cucumber melon, but there was also grass.
Okay, well,
like
I never
cut grass.
Smelled like grass. The thing that was trending for me was the sunflowers perfume.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really aggressive. Yeah. I prefer even still a fruity smell over a floral smell. I am not using $3 Rite Aid body spray. But so I was like, oh, like a light, like apple smell. That's nice, right? No, it smells like celery. I mean, Michael's like, it smells good. Like it smells like food, but it smells like celery.
It smells good. Like, well, celery doesn't smell good.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm going to have to smell this for myself.
I can smell now is celery. Okay. So
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Right.
Well, you know what? Let's just do a hard pivot into a heinous crime. How are you feeling about that?
Bring it. I'm ready.
Okay. All right. Have you ever heard of the Twilight Killers?
Twilight Killers. No. Do we mean Twilight as in it's about to be dark out, or Twilight as in the vampire movie?
The latter.
Okay, great.
Okay, well then I'm going to tell you about the Twilight Killers. This is another for the Chaos Kid Club members. Sorry,
you got
guys.
More fucking delinquent teenagers.
Yes,
we got to change the podcast name to Crime, Wine, and Teenagers.
I know that chaos implies teenagers. That's an umbrella.
That's true. That's an umbrella. Okay.
Teenagers are under it.
That is true. Okay.
So yeah. All right, here we go. Okay. Elizabeth Edwards was a 49-year-old single mom raising two girls, Kim and Katie, in Spalding, Lincolnshire. I'm sorry, Lincolnshire. Lincolnshire. In England.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. In April of 2016. So this is where we're, this is where all this, these events take place, or the main event takes place. April 2016. Her eldest daughter, Mary, was 26 at the time and living in Derby with her husband and children. I couldn't figure out for the life of me where Derby is or how far away it is from Spalding. Mm. Spalding is not a big town. I think in 2011, the census had it at like 38,000 people.
Okay.
It's way north of London in the, you know, kind of nowhere land of, I don't know. I don't know enough about England to, you know, explain that. But anyway, Mary had a different dad than Kim and Katie, whose own father had been out of the picture since they were both very little. Kim was 14. Katie was 13. So really close in age.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and Kim, the 14-year-old, had a rocky relationship that stemmed from, well, it all started supposedly from this incident when Kim was 5 or 6. Apparently, Elizabeth hit or punched, depending on which article you read, Kim in the face during an argument about the TV.
Okay.
One report said Elizabeth actually called family services on herself after this. Hmm. But the
Sorry, I'm just trying to do quick math, with which I'm not good at. So when the little one was like 5 and she's like a teenager when she punches her in the face?
No. Kim is 5 or 6. So this was when then the 13-year-old, her younger sister would be like, oh, you mean Mary?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was getting confused. Sorry.
Okay. So Mary, so there's the older daughter, Mary. Uh-huh. At the time of this set of events, Mary is 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Kim and Katie are 14 and 13.
Okay.
So they're, I can't do math. I'm not good at okay. 12. She's like 12 years older than her next
Got
sister,
it.
Right?
Got it. Uh-huh.
So when Kim, the now 14-year-old, when she was 5 or 6 is when this incident happened.
Got it. Okay.
So the result of this call to family services is that Kim and Katie were both removed from the home for a few months. The girls were returned to Elizabeth. The file on the family was closed. Normal life supposedly resumed, but Kim could never really get past that incident. It really set the tone for the mm-hmm. next, you know, 10 years or whatever, 9 years. And Elizabeth and Kim would struggle to get along this entire time. So Kim believed that Elizabeth loved Katie more. And in the ensuing years, Kim would become increasingly depressed and disagreeable. She threatened to run away on multiple occasions, and she even reported her mom to family services for choking her. It appears that nothing came of that claim, so it's unclear whether that actually happened or not. Different reports talked about Elizabeth having a husband and or a boyfriend who was abusive to her, and like the girls saw this abuse going on in the home. There was also other reports that like there was just violence in the home. So it's like, I'm not sure like if Elizabeth continued to struggle with not hitting her kids.
Okay.
That isn't super clear.
Right. Right.
But the more than one report said that she was the one that called family services on herself when that incident happened when Kim was 5. Right. So Elizabeth was trying.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Kim wrote a suicide note that worried Elizabeth enough to take her for an emergency psychiatric assessment, but they found no signs of any mental illness in Kim. And Elizabeth and Kim fought all the time. When Kim was 13, she met Lucas Markham, who was also 13 at the time.
What's does the little sister have a good relationship with Kim, or is Kim just the black sheep altogether?
I think it's more the black sheep situation. I saw a couple of things where it just briefly mentioned that, you know, Kim and Katie also did not get along. And I think that there was like the resentment that Kim had over this perception that Elizabeth favored Katie,
mm-hmm.
like also extended to her relationship with Katie.
Yeah.
So it was like she was left out of this family dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first time Kim saw Lucas at John Glebe High School, he was throwing a chair across the classroom.
Oh, God. And she just had hearts in her eyes, or?
It was love at first sight.
Cool. Throwing a chair? What the fuck?
They were inseparable from that day on.
Wow. Well, I guess if you grow up in a violent home and that's normal, I mean, I don't fucking know.
I don't know either.
Okay.
So by all accounts, the relationship between Kim and Lucas was intense, highly sexual, and they spent all their time together.
Mm-hmm.
They're 13.
Yeah, normal. Totally normal.
Totally. Typical teenagers. Just typical teenagers. Mm-hmm. Yep. Their driving bond seemed to be their troubled childhoods.
Oh, trauma bonding.
Trauma bonding. Lucas's parents had a violent relationship, which led to them splitting up, and he and his brothers were taken into foster care. Eventually, they moved in with his aunt when he was around 4.
Hmm.
When he was 5, his mom died from leukemia.
Oh, God.
And his relationship with his dad was extremely difficult as his dad was an alcoholic.
Oh, my God, this poor kid.
Mm-hmm. Lucas is described as extremely smart, especially good at math, but he had a horrible temper and an anger management problem.
Mm-hmm.
He was constantly getting into fights at school and arguments with his teachers. A friend from his school said, you could sit and have a really good conversation with him, but he was always just really angry all the time at people.
Oh, God, I've known people like that where it's like, it's just seething under the surface and it's like uncomfortable to be around them. Like mm-hmm. at any moment, you're going to blow.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth obviously is very concerned about this relationship. She thought that the two were way too young to be having sex and that their all-consuming romance was unhealthy.
Yeah.
She did everything she could to mitigate this. She urged Kim to break up with Lucas, and then she told them he wasn't allowed inside the house.
Oh, no.
So they would just hang out in the yard. Okay. Older sister Mary, she described the two as a time bomb waiting to go off.
Yep.
Elizabeth would call Mary often during this period of time and tell her how worried she was about Kim and how Kim had become withdrawn from family and friends ever since she started dating Lucas.
Red flags.
I know. You see where this is. Okay. So in October of 2015, the teens ran away from home together.
Mm-hmm.
They were found almost a week later sleeping in a tent together in a nearby town. So it was after this that Elizabeth basically forbid them from seeing each other at all.
Okay, here's the thing. I've been in this. It's hard, and I'm no expert, but I think this is one of those keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Right.
I can't tell you how badly I wanted little fuckers not in my home, but I also wanted them to only hang out in my home.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a bad spot to be in.
So obviously all this did was create more tension between her and Kim and drive the teens closer together.
Mm-hmm.
In March of 2016, Kim had a serious suicide attempt, an overdose of pain medication that required an emergency room visit. Elizabeth put the whole family in counseling after that. Mary, Kim, Katie's older half-sister, would later say that things were really good during this period of family counseling. The family was in a really good place and everyone was really settled. The girls were happy in school and everyone was getting along really well.
Oh, good.
But the following month, in April of 2016, Kim and Lucas started working on a plan to be together forever.
Oh, okay.
It took them 3 attempts to follow through on their plan, as it involved Lucas sneaking into the Edwards home late at night. On the 11th of April, Kim fell asleep and failed to let Lucas in because she passed out.
Mm-hmm.
The next night, the 12th, the same thing happened again. She fell asleep before she could let Lucas in.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, on April 14th, 2016, Lucas walked the 30 minutes from his house to the Edwards home carrying a bag with 4 kitchen knives.
Oh, God.
And knocked 3 times on Kim's bedroom window, their prearranged sign.
Oh, no.
Kim let Lucas in through the bathroom window, opened the bag, took out one of the knives and handed it to Lucas, who started to work on their plan. He went into Elizabeth's room while she slept and stabbed her in the neck.
Oh, God.
Then smothered her with a pillow and stabbed her 8 more times.
Oh, God.
Kim went into her mom's room to check on Lucas and make sure that he's okay.
Sure.
And he was on top of Elizabeth with the pillow over her face. And Kim thought she heard her mom say, "Get off me." It took 10 minutes for Elizabeth to die.
Oh, no. God, how can you do that while your mom is...
Wow. I don't...
The next part of the plan was for Kim to kill her little sister, Katie.
No.
But Kim had a panic attack after seeing her mom killed, and she couldn't bring herself to do it. So Lucas went into the bedroom where Katie slept, a room she shared with Kim.
What?
And he did... Mm-hmm. And he did to her what he had done to their mom, stabbed her multiple times and then smothered her with a pillow.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Then they took a bath together to wash the blood away so that the dog wouldn't smell it, because the dog doesn't like the smell of blood. And Lucas and Kim don't like the smell of blood.
Oh.
Kim put on her Minions pajamas.
Oh, my God. Children. These are children.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty sure she covered her sister with a blanket, but not her mom.
Uh-huh.
And then they went downstairs and got cozy on the couch with blankies and pillows, and they ate tea cakes and ice cream and had sex and watched 3 of the Twilight movies.
Oh, my God. Okay. The idea... This is not the main point here, but the idea of having sex after that just happened, that's what happened with Gypsy Rose as well. And it's like, how can you, that's just so, that there's another layer to that that is upsetting for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the next part of their plan was supposed to be a joint suicide the next day at 2 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But neither teen could bring themselves to do that, so they watched a 4th Twilight movie instead.
Oh, my God.
After the next day passed, the school reached out to someone when the teens had not shown up for their classes.
Mm-hmm.
So police went out there to do a welfare check, and it was late. I think it was close to midnight when the police finally broke into the house. And when they asked Lucas what was going on or what had happened, he calmly replied, "Well, why don't you go look?"
Oh, God, I just got fucking chills. Well, why don't you go look?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
When the police bring the 2 teens in for interrogation, the whole thing becomes even more chilling. Both of them told the exact same story of the events. Neither one of them threw the other under the bus. Neither one of them deflected blame for their part. Neither one of them told a lie. They just said what happened.
They give 0 fucks.
0.
Wow.
They told detectives that the plan started when Lucas said to Kim that he wished he could kill them, Elizabeth and Katie. And Kim said, yeah, but she thought he was joking. And once she realized he wasn't joking at all, she decided it was a good idea and they started working on their plan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Neither one of them showed any emotions or remorse when speaking with police about what they had done. There wasn't a single tear, a single sorry, a single regret. Everything was just calm and quiet and matter of fact.
That is chilling.
When they asked Kim why she wanted to murder her mom, she said, "Ever since I was young, I've never got on with my mom. I knew that she favored my sister more than me. Even though she said that she didn't, I knew that she was lying."
Oh, and that equals murder? But that's what, okay. Fuck. Mm-hmm. Wow.
When asked how she felt about it, Kim said, "I was okay with it. The fact that it happened so quickly gave me peace of mind because it wasn't like torture or anything."
Wow. Oh, Jesus Christ. Do you think that this is like just not being old enough to fully grasp like the consequences of your actions? Or is this like...
I'm not sure. I am not entirely sure.
That is chilling.
She also said, "My mom doesn't have to deal with me being suicidal, and she doesn't have to wake up worrying every morning and see if I'm still alive. And my sister doesn't have to go through all the heartbreak and emotions and stuff. I thought it would have been better for my sister to die too. I was not killing my sister out of anger, and I miss her, but I was excited about killing my mother, and I was looking forward to it."
Whoa. Yikes. Jesus Christ. Okay.
And it's that thing again. That comes up over and over and over again. She wanted to kill her sister so her sister wouldn't have to be heartbroken. Yes. And deal with the grief and the shock and all of the things of finding out her mother is murdered.
Yeah, now, I was thinking that too when you were saying my mom doesn't have to worry about my suicide attempts. It's like putting her out of her misery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Lucas actually said that, and he said that the reason he killed the sister was because she would have called the police.
Mm. Both are probably true.
Yep.
God. Yep.
Kim also said, "We felt laid back about what had happened. Neither of us felt that bad about it."
Oh my God. You expect two girls so close in age that they would be so close, that they would be besties.
I mean, sometimes.
It's just so fucking awful. It's so awful.
And poor Mary, she got the call and she had to go to the house and identify the bodies.
Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful.
She sat in the courtroom every day during the trial for Kim. I don't know if she did for Lucas. And she had to watch her sister talk about these murders with absolutely no emotion or remorse of any kind.
Okay, so she wasn't in shock.
Nope. Mary said in a TV interview years later, "I was expecting at least something, especially when it come to Katie. With my mom, I kind of knew that she wouldn't show remorse because she kind of hated mom. We all kind of knew that. But when it came to Katie, I was expecting some, and there was nothing. And even to this day, there is no remorse. I kept looking at Kim, and I literally wanted to jump over that fence and knock her face off, basically. When she did look at me, she had the cheek to smirk at me. She smirked at me as if to say, ha ha. And I just looked at her and I had to go out. I felt sick."
Oh, God.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine. Yeah.
No, of course you can't. I'm so sorry. No, I don't know why.
I mean, I can't. I don't really have sisters, so I can't fully. God.
Seriously.
Christ. And Mary has nobody now. Well, I mean, she's got her husband.
She's her husband and her kids, but...
But that was her whole family.
I mean, one guy on one of the videos I watched talked about how this was essentially a family annihilation by proxy.
Yeah.
As if she had basically hired Lucas as a hitman to take out her family.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, uh-huh.
So Kim refused to plead guilty to murder and instead opted for the lesser charge of manslaughter. What? Which was not accepted by prosecution, which led to the trial.
Oh, she's like a la carting at a restaurant. You know, yes. I'll actually take a little manslaughter.
Yes.
Like that. That's not how this works.
No, it's not how any of this works.
God.
Her defense tried to use a mental illness defense of some kind. I'm not sure how that works in England. I just read one sentence or whatever that was like they tried to, right? Police evaluations didn't find either of the murderers to suffer from a recognized mental illness, but Kim did show signs of a personality disorder, which cannot be diagnosed until she reaches 18, which I assume is part of the law in England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tricky.
The tapes of her confession to the police were all the jury needed to hear to reject any notion that she didn't know what she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In November 2016, Kim Edwards was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison alongside Lucas Markham, who had pled guilty before trial. Both appealed their sentences and they were reduced to 17 and a half years. As of today, they have served 6 or 7 of those years.
Wow.
Edwards and Markham are the youngest killers in the UK and the first double murders by 14-year-olds.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Some people have described this as a case of folie à deux, but not everyone agrees with that. And I actually don't know if I agree with that at all.
That's like a shared psychosis, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah. There was a lot of people, a couple of places where people talked about it, like Romeo and Juliet, and like, don't mm-hmm. even get me started.
No.
Because first of all, Romeo and Juliet was supposed to be, it's not a love story. It's not supposed to be this tragic love tale. It was supposed to be like a statement on the ridiculousness of teenage infatuation,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's not a romantic tale at all. Uh-huh. also in Romeo and Juliet, like, yes, a friend gets killed in a fight, but like, ultimately in Romeo and Juliet, they take themselves out. They don't take, like, you know, Romeo's mom and sister down.
Right.
But Juliet's mom and sister, right?
This is not exactly, but it's like you saw this with the Carnation Christmas killing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Gypsy Rose. There's something about the young people that are obsessed with each other or whatever that I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Well, the Carnation killings, those, they were adults. She was like 29 when that happened.
Yeah, she was also sort of stunted because I don't know. There's something, yeah, I don't think it's a shared psychosis, but I don't know. I don't know what it is.
So it was interesting because, you know, things are a little bit different in the UK where the law is concerned. Normally they don't release the confession or like the interview tapes of minors, but this one was like such a huge case when it happened, and like, the whole country was just rocked by this murder, right? This double murder by these two 14-year-olds. Like, it's crazy pants. So you can actually go and like hear like her actually say these things. And she's just talking like, you know, like this. And, you know, I don't really feel bad about it because, you know, like whatever.
Oh, my God. That's just really creepy.
It's really unsettling. Mm-hmm. It's really, really unsettling. So that's the Twilight Killers.
I hate that, sister.
You're so welcome.
Oh my God. That's fucking spooky. You know, with this one, well, and with the one that you did for the Patreon, if you want to hear it, go sign up.
Shameless plug.
I wonder, like, I oftentimes wonder if after years have passed in prison and they have reached adulthood, like if there's ever any remorse or reflection or, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I think that happens. I think it really depends on the person, right? Like, you know, that's that thing we talk about where it's like, okay, like with the Mont Vernon murders, right? Where there was like four boys, but like two of them were actually basically psychopaths.
Yes.
Right. And it's like that thing of like two Cassie Stoddard, right? They were both sociopaths. Like, those were both sociopaths. They were both into it. They both wanted to do it, right? Mm-hmm. On some level, like, I have to think that Kim and Lucas are both fucking sociopaths and they found each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do know. Oh.
But also the fact that they're like, they don't have any mental illness is, it's like, no way. Do two 14-year-olds murder two people and then just hang out on the couch eating ice cream and fucking and like watching movies while there's dead bodies upstairs and there's nothing mentally wrong with them? Like, that.
Right.
That's not because that's not normal. That is not typical teenage behavior.
No. Just being normal teenagers.
Just typical teens. Oh, my God. Right.
Like,
clearly they have mental issues. There's no way they don't.
I know. Oh my God. That's terrible.
Anyway, well, there you go, sis. There you go. You want to do like a hard pivot into something fun? Oh, please tell me your chaos is fun. And please do not gross me out this time. I can't take another gross out.
Okay.
I cannot.
Oh, okay.
One gross out a week is enough for me.
Okay, but you just did double teenage murderers.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, fair enough.
All right, Kay, we're going to talk about toilets.
Do you want to talk about toilets?
Do you want to talk about toilets?
Oh. Okay.
But it's actually not gross. Okay, so we're going to the village of Potsdam, New York.
Okay.
Fred Robar, who goes by Hank, he is a long time.
His name is Fred, but he goes by Hank?
Okay. Yes.
Please tell me his middle name is Henry and explain to me how Hank is a nickname for Henry.
I can't. Explain to me.
How is Dick a nickname for Richard?
How is Bill a nickname for William? It is okay. Nonsense. It's nonsense.
At least my nicknames make sense. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. That's true. Okay. So
Amber Damber Do.
Amber Damber Do. That's right. All right. So Hank here, he decorates his yard with a toilet garden.
Oh, we are actually talking about toilets.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I thought you thought I was kidding?
Yes.
Oh, no. This is actually about toilets.
I was like, don't tell me something gross. And you're like, let's talk about toilets.
No, we are talking about toilets.
Oh, my God. So good. Okay. He has a toilet garden. So, like, toilets all over the yard filled with, like dirt and planting things in the toilets. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Clever. Weird, but clever. Also, unsightly, but okay.
Oh, well, that was my whole story.
And that was chaotic. Bye.
Bye. Okay, no, we'll get into it. So he grew up here in the village. He got a job at a flower shop at the age of 14, and then he helped his dad run a gas station. So he's always been a hard worker, right? Hank has 16 rental properties and several plots of land in Potsdam.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's got a lot. He's 79 years old and a cancer survivor, and he just wants to do what he wants to do because he's not hurting anyone.
Uh-oh. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Potsdam has like a whole vibe. It's like a quaint, like Victorian style village.
I'm sure they have all kinds of ordinances about what you can and cannot do on your property to maintain that vibe. Am I right?
Well, sort of. So okay. They definitely want to maintain the vibe, and Hank's not helping. So at one point, Hank is offered a very large sum of money by Dunkin' Donuts for one of his plots, but it would require a rezoning, and Hank was denied by the city's planning commission. So Duncan ends up buying a plot down the road, and that landowner made a fortune. And it is believed that this is the real motivation behind Hank's defiance.
Sure. Sure.
He's got a bone to pick
getting,
now.
I'm getting like low-key, like Marv Heemeyer vibes right now.
Was that Killdozer?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I bet you Hank's a libertarian.
Oh, man. Fucking Hank.
I put money on it.
Probably. So later on, a drugstore made an offer on another one of Hank's properties, and the planning board denied it, but approved the sale of the property directly across the street.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely pulling a Heemeyer here.
Uh-huh. Then a short while later, another property owner in the town, Jimmy Sheehan, requests the same type of rezoning on his property in order for a Taco Bell to go in, and his request is granted.
Okay, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of residents have said that the Planning Commission is a good old boys club.
Oh, well, we talked about this. All planning commissions are good old boys club.
Well, they denied comment for this documentary.
Of course they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of Hank's many properties is a cornfield, and it has this large garage that he uses as a shop. And so he paints the garage in really bright, obnoxious colors, and he's putting up these very upsetting looking scarecrows in the cornfield that look like Satan. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. This town is very strange. So then there's talk about a Walmart going in right across from Hank's property. And the residents of the village are sort of split. Like some people want it, some people don't. One resident says, where will we buy our underwear if we don't have a Walmart? And in response to that, Hank puts up an extra long clothesline across his cornfield and hangs underwear on it.
That's perfect.
He's so weird. So Hank has all these old toilets that he had from his rental properties.
Because he kept them.
Yeah. And so he starts making toilet gardens.
That's a perfectly good toilet right there. We don't throw that out.
Mm-hmm. 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 And he has toilet gardens on every property that he owns in the village.
Wait.
It's a lot.
Okay, what's the name of this place? Potsdam?
Yeah, or we're putting that.
Put a pin in that. We're going to, that's definitely on the trip. That's mm-hmm. definitely on the road trip. Yep, yep.
Yeah, during Christmas time, he'll put a Christmas tree in the toilets. And at Easter, he does eggs. Mm-hmm. There's some residents that don't mind Hank's toilets. And in fact, like if other people are doing a renovation, they know to just drop their old toilets off to Hank.
So there's a split. There's a split here in this town of the good old boys and the Karens or whatever, and then everybody else who wants to have a good time in life.
Yeah. Hank had to put up security cameras because of how often his toilets were being vandalized.
Vandalized?
Yeah. Like people were taking sledgehammers to his toilet gardens.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was rude. It was real fucking rude.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And no, several. It's not funny.
No.
Several residents start a petition trying to demand that Hank remove his toilet gardens.
Some people have way too much time on their hands. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yes. And if you're living in some bougie little Victorian village in New York, I mean, I don't know.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
So they file this with the court and the case is dismissed because the code enforcement officer didn't file the paperwork correctly. Yeah. There was another time where the judge presiding over the case, another case, resigned prior to the verdict because they were caught using cocaine.
I love this town.
I know. And even still, there isn't exactly a city code regarding using toilets as yard decorations.
I mean, that would have to be a really specific city code.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. So in 2020, the village voted on a resolution and ordered Hank to remove his toilet gardens by September 1st or face further action. And they said that the code that he was in violation of was a junk ordinance, which they had amended in 2018 to include bathroom fixtures.
Just all bathroom fixtures, which is really unfortunate because you know there's some old clawfoot tubs that would make lovely flower beds.
Well, that's the whole thing is that it's junk removal, but there's people that have old wagon wheels and whiskey barrels. And like, it's not uncommon to use old junk as art.
And to use it as flower beds and pots. Uh-huh. And things. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah, there's like a
whole argument.
There's a right by our office where our studio is down on Westlake, right on Lake Union downtown. There's like a tiny little like old dinghy wooden like rowboat that's kind of propped up and it's filled with dirt and it's got flowers planted in it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this decision is handed down to Hank and it's like, if you don't remove your toilets, the city will do it for him. Here's a quote from Hank's attorney. He says, this guy, attorneys, man. Village residents have said that Mr. Robar has had his time with his toilets. And to that I say, there is no time limit on our constitution.
What?
Yep.
That's not good lawyering.
That sounds like it came right out of Legally Blonde.
Yeah, a Hollywood writer wrote that.
Mm-hmm. So Hank appeals this order and his attorney cites case law from New York where an old building was purchased by an artist to be graffitied. When the city wanted to tear the building down, the owner filed a claim under the Visual Artist Rights Act, which is a thing. And the city did, in fact, tear the building down, and the artist won the suit, and the city was ordered to pay him $6.7 million for destroying art.
Yeah. Wow. Get it.
Yes, because the visual arts rights have a provision in it that is specifically for monetary amounts for damaged art. So the newly written Postum City Code, they define junk as discarded material with little or no value.
Well, toilets have value.
But there's other residents that have, like I said, old barrels and wagon wheels for flower pots, antiques, and nobody else was cited. Even on the college campus in Potsdam, there is repurposed metal that was turned into art.
Right.
Okay.
It's called upcycling, you guys.
Yeah. Okay. This has nothing to do with anything. And literally, I don't even understand why it was in this documentary, but it was my favorite part. There's a lady that lives across the street from Hank, and she wrote a play called Hank's Tanks. Okay.
I love her, and I want to meet her.
Okay. It shows them doing play practice in her yard.
I'm getting major Waiting for Guffman vibes right now.
Okay, she had three people there. I think I'm pretty sure one of them was Hank playing himself. And the other guy was in a wheelchair. And it was it was weird. They all had scripts. And it was but she was trying to be Shakespearean and talking about toilets. It was so weird. It just cut to this woman doing this play. And then that had nothing to do with anything. I was like, okay. I mean, it was
that is like...
But I remove my tanks. Why? I was like, what is going on? What just happened?
If you watch Christopher Guest films, it all seems so ludicrous and ridiculous. And then you see something like that and you go, no, people are really like that. That's how people actually live. They really do that.
Oh my God. Yeah. So anyway, that happened. So Hank files a federal complaint against the village of Potsdam for $7 million for infringing on his artistic rights.
Okay.
He also applied for an immediate injunction preventing the village officials from removing his toilets.
Right.
Yep. In late 2020, after the judge reviewed Hank's complaint, it was determined that his complaint did in fact have merit, and he was granted his suit. And he settled for an undisclosed amount.
Wow.
That was a really short one. Sorry. That was Hank's toilets.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So they're still there. This was just a few years ago.
Oh, they're still there. He goes to the dollar store once a week and gets a cart full of silk flowers and goes around and spruces up all his toilets.
Huh? Spruces up his toilets. We have to go before Hank dies.
I know. Okay. And Hank, he is this little old man with a tiny little dog, and he wears his pants really high and cinched up tight with his t-shirt tucked in, and he's got a belly. I mean, it's exactly what you would think.
Just do, do, do.
Yep.
I love it so much. It's perfect.
The documentary is called Potty Town.
So good.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was a good one.
Oh, sister, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Oh, that was good stuff. Oh, do we have anything for the good of the order?
Just do all the things. Follow us on all the socials. You can follow my band at tinfoiltophat.com. You can follow Naomi at Misnomers on Twitter. What else?
Join the Patreon, listen to that bonus content, get in on this virtual wine night action.
Yeah, that's going to be
Amber a party. Told you. Yeah, Amber told you what it is. No, it was a party. I think this is after. So that it was a party.
It was a party. It was chaotic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Join us.
Oh, well, thank you for that, sister. You're fucking welcome. Love you.
Fucking love you.
I loved our double recording night, and that was fucking chaotic.
Bye-bye. Bye. Wine and Chaos is produced by 8th Direction Records. Artwork by Joshua M. Davis. Music by Paul Abner. If you would like to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at crimewineandchaos.com/Patreon. Cheers!
Folly adieu.
It smells like food. It was real fucking rude.
Across the classroom.